Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change? Everyone, I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to want to live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by $1 Million Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the programs and products page and click on $1 Million Business Pathway to get yourself started. So folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only Dr. Bridget Williams. Good morning, Doc. How you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for having me, Tommy.
It is an honor to have you on, and is I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story as well. Sure. So, Dr. Williams, for the folks who may not necessarily know who you are, can you briefly tell us who you are and how people can get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So my name is Dr. Bridget Williams. I'm traditionally a family physician. But I have, for the last 4 years or more, been in the cannabis space. So I'm a medical cannabis doctor in Ohio. I provide life coaching, as well as other integrative services through my office, IV infusion. We have our own line of CBD products, as well as we just launched a book in December.
That is awesome. And what is the name of your book?
Courage in Cannabis. So yeah. It is a collection of authors that share how cannabis has changed their life.
Yes, that is awesome. And where can people find it?
So you can go to courageincannabis.com to learn more about the book, of course, on all the Facebook and Instagram and social media. And then to learn more about my office's greenharvest.health. So instead of a .com, it's a .health, and you can learn more about what we do.
Awesome. So folks, reach out to her, follow her. Great information, great work she's doing with the CBD arena as well. So Dr. Bridget, you know, we bring amazing folks on like yourself and have you tell us stories about how you've overcome some of your biggest obstacles. And I know a little bit about your background in terms of growing up with your father. Tell us a little bit about prior to unfortunately losing your father as a young person, a little bit about life prior to him being diagnosed with colon cancer and eventually
sure.
Yeah.
So I'm from Detroit originally, right? And what's that?
Shout out Detroit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All day. So I grew up not, you know, with my immediate family, and I have a brother that's 5 years older with me, my mom. And I mean, we had kind of that middle class, you know, neighborhood growing up, very diverse, mm-hmm. you know, in the city. And I had a lot of family in the city as well. So it was a lot of kind of interaction and help and guidance and support. Yeah. You know, I can't complain about any of it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing that. So with your tell us about the early interactions where you first discovered that your father had been diagnosed with colon cancer and how it impacted you.
Absolutely. So So when, by the time he had passed, I was 12. Okay. So he was probably getting sick, you know, off and on years before that. Everything, like a lot of Black families, everything was very secretive.
Sure.
And so I didn't really know what was going on. And despite what I think my family assumed, I really didn't know what cancer was. Okay. So I think the assumption was, I don't know, we were watching Walter Cronkite back then. And yeah. I'll give you some Dan Rather, not to add too much age, right? But, you know, I think seeing things on the news, I think there was an assumption, or just from school, that I knew what cancer was. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a disease. I don't really know if I understood death and cancer.
Sure.
And so when he started going in and out of the hospital, it was just kind of this level of confusion. There was no clarity. I just accepted confusion. I really didn't even know that he could possibly die until I heard my mom having a conversation with a neighbor in the kitchen.
Wow.
So I had this, and I started to build up this level of angst. I don't want to say anger, but I had this level of angst because the confusion was overwhelming to me. And I never saw him losing tons of, I never saw him ill, if that makes sense. Like he didn't have this long, long progression. You know, I knew he had a number of surgeries and, you know, the ups and downs of all of that, but it wasn't like I started seeing someone dwindling in front of me. So yeah. I didn't have that vision in my head. And, but the confusion, which I definitely understand why we have this level of secrecy in our families, but that level of confusion caused more and more angst for me over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's pretty powerful. Why do you think today, looking back, there was a need for having that level of secrecy in the family?
I think for my mom in particular, she was not someone that dealt well with emotional confrontation. So she wasn't this open book type person. She wasn't one that was going to share information readily ever, no matter what it was. Mm-hmm. And she was very private. And so it was easier not to say anything than it was and assume, right? Than to have clear conversations.
Right.
And like I said, it was that not really understanding and knew I couldn't just ask because there was this kind of veil of secrecy that was there. So I knew I couldn't just ask her what was going on because we didn't have that level of communication.
Sure. And, you know, it's unfortunate because many of our households suffer from that lack of transparent communication as well. Right. So as a young person going through this, what were the coping mechanisms that you kind of turned to kind of help you get beyond this tragedy?
You know, I was so incredibly close to my dad. And when he passed and my mom didn't have a great relationship with his family, everybody disappeared. My mother's side of the family was still there, but my father's side of the family, as far as I know, just disappeared. Again, there wasn't clear communication. So I had loss on multiple levels without really understanding it. I never saw my grandparents again. I did not see my dad was the second oldest of six. And so I never saw any of my aunts and uncles or distant relatives for, I think, until I got married.
Wow.
Now that I think about it. So, so there was this loss on multiple levels. And I think, you know, it's hard for us to confront emotion. It's hard to know what's okay, you know, and understand the rules. And that's really, there's a rules that are set there, right? And they're unspoken rules. And you don't necessarily want to be the one to mix it up, you know? Yeah. But my coping, I think I turned, because there wasn't this ability to communicate, I turned to friends. I was depressed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was that much anxiety. I think there was more depression. Mm-hmm. And I turned, like many, two boys, you know, I'm turning 12, 13, very confused, trying to fill in the gaps, right? I knew that for me to survive, I needed to succeed if I wanted to get out from under that veil of secrecy, if I wanted to get out of that veil of confusion. I knew that I needed to be successful. Yeah. And I think that was a driving force for me.
That makes a lot of sense because certainly that's the case for a lot of young people out there who find themselves in situations where dealing with that type of tragedy as well. You know, as you were looking and going through this, did you have any mentors or guides to kind of help direct you or help you navigate these waters?
You know, it's hard to say because I think I got very involved. Now they call it show choir in high school, right. But I don't know what we call it. We didn't call it that when I was in high school. So, but you know, I had this kind of tight group of girls that they kept me busy. I can't say that they were people that I could lean on per se, but it kept me moving and going and busy and distracted. Yeah. And I think I learned that creativity and busyness was a great distraction.
Yeah.
And I learned that over time. I had, you know, a teacher here and there that I think I could kind of connect with, but I was still so confused. I still had that almost like a brain fog for years and years and years. And my coping, I think it was just pointing forward. Yeah. I knew that there's also, when you have confusion, there's also this need for control. You might not even know what you're trying to control, but you believe that if I can control something, maybe I can get out from under whatever this is. It's almost like spider webs, right?
Yeah.
That if I could figure out how to remove them, they'll be gone. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was just really focused on moving forward, just moving forward. Yeah.
And you know, when you look back today on your darkest day dealing with depression and what have you, what kept you going? What kept you driving to say, hey, you know what? I'm not sure what tomorrow's going to bring, but somehow, some way, I'm going to come up out of it.
I think I don't know if I had a choice. You know, I feel like my older brother in many ways depended on me emotionally. So even though we did not have open communication per se, I knew that he struggled, to be honest, more than I did. Mm-hmm. So I felt some responsibility towards him. Mm-hmm. And I think I always believed you write your own story. Yeah. I always believed that no matter what your circumstances are, you decide what your life is going to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was always striving for when I could start really writing my own story. I just had to get out from under where I was, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of times I'll talk to people, you know, about my father's death. And I said, you know, I was kind of in this whirlwind, this spinning. Yeah. And my comment is I've been spinning up until right now is what I always say, right? Yeah. Because there are moments where I think along my journey, I'd start to feel like I was getting clarity and then I'm back under the tide. And of course, as years have gone by and I've taken more responsibility and done more of the work, I'm all about, if you want a different life, you got to do the work. It's not just going to pop up on your lap, right? So I would do the work and finding people that could help me do the work. You know, I did therapy in a little bit in college and medical school. And I did it off and on, honestly, through the years until I really found someone, I don't want to say by accident, a friend of mine referred me to her, but the work she did was not traditional therapy. It's actually called voice dialogue. Yeah. I really recommend people to look it up because that was a life changer for me. Hmm. Particularly for people that deal with confusion and being overwhelmed and the depression, anxiety, what have you. Many times we're unclear about what we think about anything.
Sure.
There's this fog. Voice dialogue really looks at how you are multifaceted people. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you might actually have two different feelings about the same thing because you have the child in you, you have the leader in you, you have the person that is fearful of things, you have the person that has been damaged, yeah. and they all have different voices, they all see things from a different lens. Mm-hmm. And understanding all of those lenses and usually one voice is stronger than the other in a particular situation. Mm-hmm. Once you learn those lenses, once you learn those different voices, you can really draw in the one that you want to be present mm-hmm. for any specific situation and to strengthen the voices that motivate you and protect you. Mm-hmm. And then to forgive or quiet the voices that might actually, you know, be causing you more havoc. And that was a life changer.
Wow. That sounds like a phenomenal approach to healing.
Yes.
It sounds amazing.
Yes.
So as you look back on your journey today, Dr. Bridget, how would you say that whole ordeal kind of shaped the work that you're doing today? Is there any connection?
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, being in and out of hospitals growing up, you know, seeing my father, I was a psychology major because I always wanted to understand why we behave the way we do, right? And I used to watch PBS and Leo Buscaglia, and, you know, there was this whole movement of self-help that was developing in the 80s and 90s. And so I was really drawn to that. But growing up, being in and out of the hospitals, the medical team comes in the room, and here is this wife and two kids, and the whole team comes in. They don't even look at us. They don't acknowledge us. They go towards my father's bed, but they don't even talk to him. They talk about him amongst each other, and then they walk out. And I found that so irritating. And I would look at my mom and say, you know, I could really do this better. I was like, I'm 12 years old. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, how do you not see these children that are confused and this what? Like, how do you not at least say hello?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. How do you not do that? And every time my mom would say, you know, if you can do it better, you should do that. Right. Mm-hmm. You should do that. Mm-hmm. And so I was a psych major in college because I wanted to understand more, but I had the option of either going and getting a PhD and doing more therapy, which I think was a natural inclination, sure. But I decided to go into medicine in my young kind of romantic, heroic mind that I was going to change medicine. Sure. Right. And which made me a little bit of a square peg trying to fit in a round hole, you know, right. Because what motivate me were the people and their behaviors, and what motivated people to change. So I came in with a psychology focus, mm-hmm. into a medical space,
mm-hmm.
and medical space that was evolving from the art of medicine into pharmaceutical medicine, mm-hmm. and the insurance companies taking over. So I'm right at that edge where people, you know, doctors own their own practice. They would practice how they choose. Everything got right. I was coming in when things were getting very highly regulated, where insurance companies said, you need to make more money, right? And the HMOs. And so we went from you setting up your own schedule to every visit 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every solution to a diagnosis is a pill. So I came in the midst of that.
Uh-huh.
But here I come with my, you know, heroic ideas about people and personality, and understanding them will allow us to help them. Mm-hmm. So that was always a very difficult, because I was kind of like on the outside with my peers. And so that made my medical education difficult,
mm-hmm.
because I just came in with a whole different attitude,
mm-hmm.
than the rest of them. But that's kind of why I was there. You know, mm-hmm. And so after doing my training and doing Cleveland Clinic for almost 20 years, I learned about cannabis along the way from a patient that I saw it actually, I was working with her, honestly, and I saw it transform her health, wow. Which blew my mind because I knew nothing about cannabis, mm-hmm. and definitely didn't know anything medicinal about it. So when it came to Ohio, I knew I wanted to be a part of the medical cannabis program. And at first I was just going to do what I always do. I was going to join a practice and start giving out medical cards, mm-hmm. you know, for cannabis. And when they said, we don't care what you know, we just do cards for cash, we're in and out, we don't do all that. I was like, no, I've done what I was supposed to do. And I started to really feel a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm going to take why I got here in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to apply it to cannabis. And so I created my own offices. It took a minute because even when I created my own offices, I was still like, okay, 15 minutes, you know, and I was like, oh, I own this.
Yeah.
Oh, I can sit back.
Yeah.
I can give patients what they've been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
So we do our shortest appointment is a half an hour, you mm-hmm. know, and we do education. We have slides. We have free follow-ups to make mm-hmm. sure there's nothing that stands in the way of you getting additional care. We do a lot of education with our patients, and we do a lot of time. And I'm also, like I said, a life coach. So people that want to dig deeper. And I think it's an interesting concept to get that type of help from your physician.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, so absolutely. My father's experience, my experience of his illness, definitely changed my, I never did I ever think I would be in the space where I'd be helping people get weed. Right. But it's an incredible modality and an alternative to pharmaceutical medicine. And I believe in that. And I love sharing that with people because people have this idea of what cannabis is.
Sure.
So much different from that.
Yeah. That is amazing. I love seeing your life come full circle as well. You know, so Dr. Bridget out there, you know, we have a lot of folks who are listening out there. It's been a tough 2 years. People have lost loved ones. They've lost finances. They've lost material possessions, lost jobs. And even in some situations, Dr. Bridget lost hope. Those folks out there are listening who are wanting to believe that a better day is to come. What can you tell those folks to encourage them to hold on and hang in there?
You know, human existence, you know, we're given this gift of life. And we, you know, if you're too caught up into media, what have you, you have this very romantic idea about what life is supposed to be about. But life is filled with difficulties and tragedies and pandemics throughout the history of the world, right? And many times people try to fight that instead of understanding that this is a part of the experience. And those experiences, either it will damn you, it will hold you back, it will, like you said, you've lost hope, or you can propel that into your next move. That is our responsibility. We write, we create the narrative, we create our story. There isn't a successful person, what, however you deem success on this planet, that doesn't have a backstory filled with tragedy.
Absolutely.
And if you were trying to live that perfect life towards the golden ticket, that's not how you get there. It's you, life is filled with all sorts of things. And it's kind of like an intellectual way of seeing our human experience. Because there's a lot of emotion and I don't mean to gloss over that by any means. Like, I've been there. I've been sitting in depression, but I've also known that that was not what my life was supposed to be about. And so it's about understanding, no matter what's happened to you, you can change the narrative. You can figure something out. You can have that next conversation at the bus stop or at the grocery store that could possibly change your life.
Yes.
You know, and provide you a new sense of hope. So continue to engage and continue to share where you're from, because someone's going to hear that and say, you know what, I've got something for you.
Yes.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Great advice, Dr. Bridget Williams. Folks, I hope you guys have been very inspired by our story. What an amazing person and someone who can learn from as well. So Dr. Bridget, we talked about tough stuff. You ready to have a little fun?
Okay. I guess so.
All right. Ready to have some fun here. All right. Okay. So this portion of our show is called our rapid fire purpose questions. All right.
Okay.
Ask some questions about purpose. I want you to give me in the audience your most concise answer. Are you ready?
I'm wordy, but I promise to be good. So,
all right, here we go. Dr. Bridget, what gives your life meaning?
My children.
What one word best describes you?
Persistent.
Good. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Roller skate?
Roller skate.
I think
maybe
I still rollerblade now, so I think that was a big part of it. Yeah,
really. Okay, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I love it. What do you wish you had more time to do?
Spend time with my like older relatives and just hang out on the front porch like I grew up. I just wish I did more of that.
Yeah, I love it.
More phone calls, more. I need more of that.
Yeah. Yes. What did your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
What did my 15-year-old probably being a doctor somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Love it. Who inspires you the most?
My mom was a force to be working with. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And reinvented herself all the time. So without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. What is on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Travel more. Uh-huh. And when I travel, enjoy it more. Some of it's work related, but enjoy it more. And solidify my business. Like, we've got incredible things going and I want it on a trajectory.
Yes. I love it. What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
Something that I'll spend my time doing no matter what? Truthfully, probably social media. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. But then you're drawn to it and it's horrible. So that's just the truth. I'm on there and I hate it.
What a dichotomy, right?
Yeah.
What's something about yourself we might be surprised to learn about you?
I'm always surprised how people see me. Mm-hmm. So number one, I love rollerblading. But I don't wear protective equipment, which I don't recommend to others. Okay. Wear your protective equipment. And I'm really, really laid back and I swear a lot.
Okay. Cool. Good to know. Good to know. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
Oh, the fire. The fire. Yeah. The persistence. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Gosh, you know, there's a part of me that just wants a little invisibility.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Like that. Good superpower. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come in handy on many fronts, right?
Yeah.
What sparks your creativity?
You know what? I love watching other creative people. When I see your gears, when I can see it turning, I'm like, oh, here it comes. You know, I love working with creative people. I love seeing that energy. And of course, it fuels mine.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. If you became president today, what law would you pass first?
You know, I mean, I think a lot of people would assume it would be cannabis legalization.
Right.
But I would, yes, that would be it, because I see so much ridiculous behavior. And I think it would give a really great medicinal option. But I'm particularly interested in actually prisoners and veterans, whether it's cannabis related. What, there's so many laws that need to be changed for prisoners and ex-prisoners. And that's something I've really kind of locked into recently. And there's a shame and there's so many innocent people that have gone to prison.
Absolutely.
So I think I would want to focus there, pick families back together. You know,
you definitely get a lot of you get a lot of votes there. Certainly my vote as well.
Yeah.
If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
There's so many, there's so many incredible people. It would have to be a strong woman entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And as far as how they spend their day, how they spend their time, there's so many incredible people out there. I mean, the obvious ones are the Oprahs and the Michelle Obamas or what have you. But I would choose a strong woman, Black woman entrepreneur. Yeah.
Awesome. So many of them out there. What's been the best gift someone's ever given you?
I love musical theater and season tickets.
Okay.
Yeah.
To see who?
The whole season. So it was probably 6 or 7 shows.
All right.
So that was, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it. What's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Keep going. Yeah. Like whatever that is. I mean, I'm always afraid. I was afraid to talk to you. I mean, You know, I mean, there's always something. Anxiety, see, anxiety is a really beautiful thing because it makes you wake up. It gets you there. It makes you, anxiety is not bad. Mm-hmm. So that's not a problem, but I've never been afraid to reinvent myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Great answer. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Oh, I won an art contest. I mean, this was like, I was pretty little, but I won an art contest that I won a Mother's Day brunch for my family.
Oh.
And, you know, in my head now, it was beautiful. My little drawing was fantastic. It's probably, if I saw it today, it would probably be not that great, but I thought that was really cool. I mean, and like I did a lot, I named our school newspaper when I was in elementary school. Wow. And they kept that name until they changed the name of the school.
Wow.
So for years and years and years. So
that's awesome. I love it. What does success look like for you?
Helping others, motivating, putting my business in a place where other people are really benefiting from it, right? Where I'm stepping back and they are really the ones kind of running that ship.
Yeah.
Because now you're not just helping yourself, you're employed. Like I have employees, you know, but to where they're kind of running this whole thing and they're upwardly mobile.
Yeah.
That's ideal. Because you know, you did something. You're feeding someone else's family now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are you most grateful for?
I have some amazing, motivating people in my life that have allowed me to, like I said, reinvent myself and help me gain my confidence back. Mm-hmm. And that includes my kids. You know, they don't hold any punches, you know? Yeah. So, and I learn from them every day.
Awesome. Yeah. What's been the biggest lesson you ever learned in life so far?
Believe in yourself. Do not falter on that. Yes. Because no one's going to give that to you. No one can give you faith in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take that in. And no one can affirm that for you. That is so intrinsic to who you are that once you've got it, don't let that go.
Yeah, what a great lesson. I love it. Last but not least, Dr. Bridget, how do you want to be remembered in history?
Trailblazer. Yeah.
I love it. You survived. Give yourself a round of applause, Dr. Bridget Williams. Awesome job. Awesome job. And last but not least, Dr. Bridget Williams.
Yes.
A couple of things that our show focuses on. Purpose.
Yeah.
And resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
I think it's kind of how I live my life, that you stay open because your purpose can shift and move and you have to be ready. Okay. And you're the one that creates your story. Mm-hmm. It's chance meetings. It's a chance book that you happen to read. It's stay open and create your own narrative. No one should define you.
Yeah. I love it. Great advice, folks. I hope you guys have been inspired by Dr. Bridget Williams' story, her expertise. Dr. Williams, if people want to get a hold of you again, what's the best way to do that?
So they can, I'm always open to emails. Go to Dr. Bridget with one T. So Dr. Bridget at greenharvest.health. I'm always happy to answer emails. And if you want to just learn more about what we do, go to greenharvest.health or courageincannabis.com.
Awesome. She's made it very, very easy for you to reach out to her. Be sure to reach out, use her as a resource. Hey, if you're a person out there, you're an overcomer, got an amazing story we want to hear from you, please go to tawatson.com, share your story with us, subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories, download this episode, rate it, share with your folks on social media. And I want to thank you all for joining in today. Dr. Bridget Williams, thank you as well. Everyone else out there, God bless, peace, and deuces.
Yours truly, Dr. Watson.